Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and others. This is Byron D. Zero, fearless leader of the Weeb Trash Can podcast, with a brief disclaimer of the forthcoming episode. This is episode 1.5. Why 1.5? Because the episode 1 that is released is only an MP4 format, which technically makes it a video podcast. Unfortunately, Google Play does not do MP4s, and there's not really much to see on it. So, I wanted to re-release this episode so that everyone can listen to it on any platform. Furthermore, I wanted to just give a heads up to anyone with sensitive ears. The audio is a bit janky. So there are brief spikes that will mess with anyone with sensitive ears. So if you think that you might be one of those people, I highly recommend not listening to this any further. All right, let the show begin. Adani equals A! Good afternoon, and welcome to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. Hi guys, I'm Byron D0, and I'm with this motley crew of misfits. We're going to talk your heads off about anime-related things. So, your turn.
I'm Mark, aka the Mechanical Guy. I'm here just putting my input on mech anime and all others that I do have an inkling on.
I'm Giuseppe Megatron Paulino. My voice is as smooth as I am. That's all good.
He's so humble, guys.
So humble.
Hey, as long as you recognize.
Yeah, right? Hi, I'm Maggie. I'm here because Byron asked me, like, this week to join. So I'm here to put in my 2 cents on things.
All right, and I'm Brittany. AKA 606 Defender of Justice. yeah, I saw that Byron posted a Facebook status talking about a weed trash can, and I was like, that's literally me. like, I have to be a part of this, so yes. Here I am.
I guess maybe I should throw out my Twitter handle since everybody else has been doing that. I'm Maggleby.
Woo! Welcome. Okay, so today's topic, we're going to be talking about our first anime. I know a lot of anime fans who have gone up and down various series, various movies, but I feel like you can get a better understanding of an anime fan by the first show or first shows, sometimes movies that got them into it. For me, I kind of have a couple ones. I'm going to go with a couple obscure ones that you probably wouldn't know unless you grew up watching CBN, but they did an adaptation of some Bible story anime. There were two called Super Book, which was literally about Bible stories. The characters had like a talking robot and a technological Bible. It was weird, but you know, it was interesting. The original was nowhere near as religious as they made it, because as I've learned in Japan, they kind of treat Bible stories and Christianity like the way we in the West treat Greek myths. They're just stories to be told. There was another one called The Flying House, which also had a talking robot, but it was a lighthouse that was a time machine, and the one that probably really struck a chord with me and got me down the path of wisdom was My Neighbor Totoro. I remember where I was the moment this was released in theaters in the U.S. It was the mid-90s, I want to say 93, 94, and I was living with my mom in Brooklyn at the time.
I was born in that.
Yeah.
I'm 23. I'm the baby.
So, like I said, I remember I was living in Brooklyn at the time with my mom. I see the commercial on Fox. I'm like, what's that? I'm like, Mom, I want to see this. Mom, you take me. I'm like, I'm basically like just dragging my dragging against her leg. I'm like, let's go see it. The only theater that was playing at the time was near Rockefeller Center. So that Friday when I got out of school, I can't even recall it. I have...
Oh, shit, that came out in 88.
Yes, it did. And they Fox got the license for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they finally brought it to the States. But yeah, I begged her. We made a day of it. We went down to Rockefeller Center. There was an artist down there, and he drew a really nice picture of me. I don't know what happened to the picture. Fond memory. Aww. I still hold the memories in my heart. And I remember like grinning from ear to ear when I saw it in theaters for the first time. And the soundtrack was amazing, especially when they played a Toro theme when the kids were like flying with him in the sky. Mm-hmm. And then after that I'm like just like singing the theme song as to myself as I'm going, I'm like Totoro, Totoro, Totoro. And then when I got back into school, none of my other classmates knew what the fuck I was talking about. And you know, it kind of was that way for a long time at the Weebs, like trying to find people before like it became such a big internet community, like just trying to find people to talk with this stuff about. It's like,
yeah, like I mean, not to cut you off, but like I remember in high school even. If you liked anime, you were considered a weirdo. And I was
flat
out.
It just
wasn't like not that I was like super shy about it or like reserved about it. Like in high school, I was kind of an asshole because people were assholes to me. But at the same time, it was like, damn, I can't talk to nobody about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you go around high school wearing like this Attack on Titan shirt, you know, or a Naruto shirt, or
yeah, they'd
like
point
that,
it out, and make fun, and they'd be relentless too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And even nowadays, that's still the case. You know, it's still definitely a niche thing, but not nearly as the fact that there is identifiable wardrobe that mm-hmm. anyone can go out to like Hot Topic and buy.
Yeah, that's amazing. Tells
how far it's come, but. Yeah, I mean, there's still definitely a social outcast aspect to it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I work in a public school, so I see like a lot of kids wearing like weeb type attire. Like I see like a lot of the sixth and fifth grader girls wearing cat ear headbands. And I'm just like, where is like it's like it is coming full circle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I saw a kid a couple weeks ago wearing a trunk shirt while I was walking out of class. I'm like, what do you know? What do you know about that? Yes.
Hey, don't be gatekeeping, man.
He gives the kids a hard time. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm just like, really? What do you know about trunks? He's like, oh, you're your son. I'm like, okay. Okay.
All right.
You're shoving my pass, I'm telling you.
I enjoy using it as a conversation starter, but it's as long as you don't actively, like, discourage kids.
Exactly.
That's the breaking point is you can go up and see someone wearing a trunk shirt and be like, what do you know about trunks? And, like, quiz them. Or you can say, hey, what do you know about trunks? Yeah. Like, I didn't think that someone your age knew about that.
Yes.
Yeah, back to Totoro, I guess.
Yes. But, like, from that point on, I would watch other things, but I would add one more to that list. The one that like kind of taught me the complexities of like anime storytelling would be Gundam Wing.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I had been to Dragon Ball. I had seen like a couple of movies here and there on Sci-Fi Channel. But Gundam Wing was like my introduction into the Gundam franchise, it was like my first quote unquote war anime.
Mm-hmm.
Like just understanding like sometimes the good guys aren't all that good and. Sometimes the bad guys have a reason for being bad.
Right.
And of course, I want to say I was 15 when I first saw Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 14. Yeah. At the same time.
Yeah, and then, like, after the fact, I remember, like, just thinking, like, wow, this could be us, given the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, my 15-year-old brain couldn't process a lot of the more complex aspects of it. So I made the mistake of taking a lot of it at face value, but like watching more stuff like that, getting into a lot of war stories, now I kind of have a better understanding of why these stories have to be told the way they are, because that's how life is.
Yep.
And granted, I no longer see anime as this altruistic art form that I used to. I still appreciate stories like that, even if Gundam Wing hasn't aged all that well. Which I'm sure a lot of fans will say. They love the pretty boys, but it's not such... It really wasn't that great of an anime.
Wait, that's not what it was primarily about? Okay, I'm saying that, but I haven't actually watched it, which is... That needs to be a homework assignment. Yeah.
So like, here's the thing, right? So, Gundam Wing, God Gundam, Gundam Seed, what is it, 0081 or something like that?
Yeah.
All those.
All of them, right? They're all... telling this crazy, crazy complex story. And, you know, from my point of view as a soldier, it's just so, oh man, if I cry, don't hold it against me. It's so like real and to the point. Like, there's so many things happening behind the scenes that that Gundam Wing is able to capture, and like, there's all this conflict and all this drama, like the Peacecraft, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And like all that stuff really comes together in a way that balances both the politics and the front line side of it.
I would dare to say that Gundam 00 does a better job telling Gundam Wing's story.
Yeah, it sets it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they flesh the characters out more, and they actually had two seasons of it, mm-hmm. as opposed to the 26 episode structure that was Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
I feel like if Gundam Wing had more time to tell its story, maybe it would have ended better.
Well, I mean, Endless Waltz did a pretty good job. For me, it did.
Okay. Although, if I'm going to recommend like a good War Gundam story,
yeah.
Iron Blood Orphans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's it shows like the pilots as soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would also say like the original Universal Century Gundam stories for good war stories as well.
Yep.
War in the Pocket.
Mm.
I cannot recommend that mini series enough.
Mm-hmm. Bernie!
Oh, yeah. Yes. And Bennett the Sage actually did a really awesome review on War in the Pocket. He explained how, like, Al, one of the main characters of the story, was not portrayed as this obnoxious little shit.
Yeah.
And he was relatable. And just showing, like, how war can affect people that aren't necessarily in the crossfires.
Yep. There's always collateral damage.
Yes.
Well, the one that really got me weaved out, as I stated earlier, was Voltron. It's like, I was kind of into anime before, like, Dragon Ball Z, like, sucked me in a little bit deeper, but when they dropped Gundam Wing, it got me back to my roots with Voltron. It's like, oh man, they're not combining, but they're still kicking ass regardless. And I managed to go a little bit deeper into that rabbit hole. At my local video store, they had like Gundam 0083 Stardust Memory, and that was what got me introduced to the Universal Century, the original Gundam timeline. And I was like, holy shit, this isn't like Gundam Wing at all.
Whew. I feel in a lot of ways that 0083 had like a Romeo and Juliet element to it.
A little bit.
More of like a love triangle.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Macross did similar things, but that's definitely a good gateway drug, though.
Yeah, but on like Macross, like they're on the same side, and like Stardust Memory, it was like they were on opposing factions. There was Gato from the Zeon and Kohorati from the Federation.
Yes,
and there was Nina Purpleton right in the middle.
Yes. One thing I liked about that one was the fact that while Ko was a good pilot, he wasn't considered like the best of the best.
Yeah, I mean, he was a test pilot. He didn't have any actual real, like, combat up until, like, the GPO-2 was stolen.
Yeah. Meanwhile, his rival was, like, he had the nickname of the Nightmare of Solomon.
Yeah.
Because he was that good, and it's like, it was a good way to make Ko seem more human.
Yeah, like, he wasn't, what is it?
A new type?
No, like, what is it called? Peggy Sue or something like that?
Mary Sue. Self-insertion.
Yeah.
Really shallow, badly done self-insertion.
There are a lot of anime that do that, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of medium that does that, because it's a bad pandering. There's some good pandering you can do out there. Mary Sue's are not.
Nope.
They're inherently, that's an internet term that was created to specifically describe bad pandering.
Mm-hmm.
Lazy pandering.
For the early 2000s, I was really heavy into Hellsing and Supernatural.
Yeah.
And it's like D. Gray Man. And it's like it really got me into the mood of like scaring people. I was working as like a horror like technician in the haunted houses.
Ooh, nice. Yes.
That's a lot of fun.
That's a really fun job.
Yeah, but that was just a short phase. And I went back into the mech anime. Let's see, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a heart wrencher right there.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see that one until I was in like my mid-20s. Like, I wish I saw it earlier on.
Yeah, so it was funny because have you guys ever seen Welcome to the NHK?
Yes.
So I watched Neon Genesis Evangelion after Welcome to the NHK. So I had like this, I just came off like this slice of life roller coaster.
Well, yeah, I can definitely see how those two would mess you up watching them successively. Yeah. Like, so you like crying, don't you?
Oh, I'm not gonna get along.
I'm in touch with my sensitive side. Yes.
No judgment here. Yeah. No judgment here.
I got a long list. If you want the tears to start flowing.
Oh my god! Oh, wow. No, that's the mark of a good anything for me is if I start crying.
Yes.
Yeah, I usually when I start an anime, I'll give it 3 episodes. If I don't cry by episode 3,
not worth it.
All right, so the first anime I ever saw was Fist of the North Star, 1986, I think. And so my brother, he got me into it. My brother was 10 years older than me. But when I watched it, I had already like, so my dad is super into Western, so violence was nothing new to me. And I'm like 6 and I'm watching Fist of the North Star. And like I see this dude. First off, he's looking kind of like the man with no name with a poncho, walking through like a deserted land or whatever, and a building falls on him, and he just keeps walking. Like, and then he starts fighting all the warriors or whatever that gang is called. And one hit, he punches one dude in the chest, and his head just starts like dismorphing, and boom, blood everywhere. It was like, whoa! And I just remember thinking to myself, this is a cartoon.
They don't want to show blood in cartoons.
Because, like, you know, before that, you had the very first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with where they still had the people in the eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing all sorts of hunky-dory stuff, but there's no, like, real weapons hitting any skin or nothing like that. Nope. And then here comes Fist of the North Star, and this dude's, like, slicing people up with his fingers, and this dude making guys' heads explode, and like this one dude with the sledgehammer crushing the other guy's skull. I was like, whoa, what's all this violence? Like the only cartoon violence I had seen up until then was Tom and Jerry. Oh, man.
An interesting thing I've always found about this Fist of the North Star, more so with the manga, is like how there's an underlying progression with it where you had Kenshiro crying for his enemies. That was not something, for a hyper-masculine character to do something like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of uncommon in like anime and manga around that time.
Yeah, there was crying Freedman.
Right. But,
oh yes.
But I mean, like, he didn't want to be an assassin at the end of the day.
Nope.
But this dude, he was just like, this is what I gotta do so I can survive. You know. Like,
yes.
Like he actually. So I think the difference there is that crying Freedman was a reluctant assassin, while what's his name?
Kenshiro.
Yeah, Kenshiro.
That was just the world he was in.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It was just his circumstances. Like, boom, you know, like, I gotta do what I gotta do. Peace out, you know?
Yes. And many of the enemies that he killed were his sworn brothers.
Yeah.
So that made the impact of him having to cry for his enemy that much more impactful.
Yeah. This is the North Star. Craziness. The one that really, really, like, opened the door for me, like opened the floodgates, was Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And I still remember that the very first episode.
Far and away, my favorite anime opening. Like, you're marathoning something, you skip the intro. Mm. I never skip that intro. It is so well done.
I think Spike Spiegel was like the third or fourth cosplay I ever did.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. That was back before my hairline started receding. I can actually grow out a proper afro.
I wanted to do Faye real bad, but I had mad body image issues, and she wears very skimpy clothing.
She wears so little.
One of these days, I should be Ein.
Yeah, get a corgi key, because that's what you need to do.
And so, for the longest time, I thought Edward was a chick. Edward is not a female.
Really?
Are you going by Japanese or English translations? Because English translations, they explicitly do say that Edward is a girl and everyone thinks that she's a bull.
Wow. I don't know. Last time I checked, Edward was a dude, not a chick.
I think I recall there's an episode where Faye finds out firsthand that she is
that she's a girl. Yeah, and it's like this whole comedic like, surprise
wait a minute,
thing.
You're a girl?
Yeah. Because it's Edward is, I mean, Edward's a boy's name typically, and she behaves in very not masculine, but like childlike, you
animalistic, almost feral.
Yes. Behaviors that are more often associated with young boys than young girls.
Yes.
And yeah, no, there's specifically a reveal where Faye's just like, "You're a girl!" It's like the end of an episode, and you just hear Edward laugh.
Yes.
Edward von Trotsky or something like that.
It's just longer than that.
I think it's
like
very
five separate
long.
Names.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But it definitely starts with Edward.
Yeah.
But,
The third.
Yeah, the third, yeah.
But, Edward the third. It is. It's a long thing. But yeah, no, I love Cowboy Bebop. And especially because it's an amazing gateway anime.
It is.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how it you know affected you when you first saw it, but for me it's the art is well done, the story is well done, and the music. The music is just phenomenal, and that's such a good tie-in for someone who isn't even who's poo-pooed anime or who's just not interested. Like my brother does not do cartoons. I can see him watching Cowboy Bebop because the music, the way it's interwoven with the story, is so incredible and so poignant. And
it's also a lot diverse too.
It varies from episode to episode. It's very universal music. Yeah, no, it's great. And that was something that the director very intentionally did, was to take the music and then build the episode around a certain sound or around a certain song.
Now that you say that, every episode is titled after either a song or an album.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's like, what is Shinichiro Watanabe?
Yes, Shinichiro Watanabe.
Yeah.
That dude,
not to be confused with Shinichi Watanabe.
Yeah. Well, everything that he does is literally built around the theme. And for Cowboy Bebop, music was the theme. Like Ballad of Fallen Angels, those two episodes were literally like you start real low, and you have the build up, the crescendo, and then you have the final boom. You know, chills. I got chills.
Yeah,
I was gonna say the music has even transcends the anime itself. Like back when I used to be more into the b-boy scene, I've noticed like a lot of the songs like Tank's remix. What Planet Is This from the movie?
Yeah,
those have been used at battles all the time.
Yeah,
I even have it on my B-boy playlist, so it's just like, okay, I'm gonna dance to this today, like when I'm on my own.
Oh no, that was the first soundtrack that I like went out of my way to download the entirety of.
Mm-hmm.
I
have the live album as well.
Oh, yeah.
The first one I downloaded in its entirety was Trigun.
That's another one. So I was actually thinking a lot about Trigun as you were explaining Lone Star. Just the setting of the setting of it.
Yeah.
Because I've only seen a couple episodes of Lone Star, but the way you guys were describing it about, you know, the reluctant assassin and it's the way of life and the desert and whatnot, and I immediately started thinking, like, oh, it sounds like a way gorier version of Trigun, setting wise at least.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's definitely some.
She means North Star.
Yeah.
North Star. I'm sorry.
No worries.
That's cool. Somewhat tied into the conversation as well.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say I've only seen the first episode or two like once, and my ex had me watch it, and it was good. I enjoyed watching it for what it was, but it, I don't know, for whatever reason at that point in my life, I didn't really continue on my own.
Mm.
All right. Cool. So, my first anime that I ever watched that I absolutely loved before I knew what anime was Castle in the Sky. And that is a Miyazaki film that is honestly not super well known. Like, when people talk about Miyazaki, they don't tend to talk about Castle in the Sky. They talk about Totoro, they talk about Kiki, they talk about, you know, Mononoke, they talk about Howl's Moving Castle. And these are all phenomenal films, but the very first Miyazaki anime, anything that I saw, was Castle in the Sky. And I remember going in, and I was at, like, my local video store, and I didn't know what I wanted to watch, and I just saw this cover, and it is literally, I thought it looked really, really cool, and I flipped over the back, and I was like, this sounds like a lot of fun. So I brought it home, and I watched it, and the artwork was unlike anything I'd ever seen. It was incredible, and this is very early Miyazaki, so it actually, in aging, it's not nearly as impressive to watch now. Like, his artistic style grew so much as he went along, but at the time, this was the first thing I'd ever seen, and I was blown away. It was incredible. And still something that I pay attention to first thing in anime is the characters, the story, and the art are what really pull me into something.
So now that you say art, right? I've seen Castle in the Sky, and in a way, I've witnessed Miyazaki's development in his art, and I can say that his use of colors. So even to what was the last one, like, was it Ponyo or something like that?
Ponyo.
So Castle in the Sky, you have all this, like, almost like mystical feeling, and then you move through, you get house moving castle, then where you have all these, like, really, really bright colors, and it starts moving.
And you can definitely see, so you can tell that it's early Miyazaki, because his art style really, really changed. Yes. And like I said, watching it again, I was like, the thing that struck me was not the art this time around. But again, as a kid, it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like this, and that's what really, really sucked me in.
Yeah.
There's also, I didn't know what steampunk was as a child, but oh man, are there some steampunk vibes to that, especially, especially in all the flashbacks that happen.
Yeah.
It's hella steampunk, which is, again, a really, really cool visual and thematic aspect that Baby Maggie, like, didn't know what was going on, but it was just, like, I knew I was interested. But the characters, I mean, Miyazaki in general is always excels at characters and themes.
Yes.
And that's what he does.
Yes, he does.
And so you have these characters who are two kids who come from very similar immediate backgrounds but have very different, like, ancestry. And they're both coming, one has this, Cheetah has this incredible legacy that she has to live up to, and she's a princess, but she doesn't know it. But she and the main boy, Patsu, both just grew up orphans working their jobs. She worked on a farm by herself, and Patsu worked in basically a mining facility. And they're both portrayed as incredibly hardworking, earnest, kind, selfless people. And you really see that contrasted in the adults of the story. And even though you have plenty of, like, all of the townsfolk from Patsu's town are well-meaning and eventually help them out and are good, the first thing you see them doing is ignoring him as he's trying to say, like, dude, there's a girl, she just fell from the sky, and they're all like, yeah, whatever. And so that continues to be a theme throughout the entire thing, is about selfless motives versus selfish motives, about, you know, innocence versus adulthood, and these are all the themes that, so, they're universal themes for a reason.
Yeah.
That they resonate with all age groups, and so as a little kid, you can't put words to this, but you still feel it, and you still get drawn into it. And watching watching all of these classic themes presented in a beautiful medium, with characters that you can really, really relate to. And that's the kind of personalities that you see with these kids. And so it really, really deeply resonated with me at that age. And then eventually when I learned, wait, this is a genre, there's more things like this, I really jumped into that, and then I kind of took a step back and went into, like, Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And stuff like that, and whatever. I really, really, this was the first, I learned that this was a genre in high school. High school is when I would say I really got into anime as a thing, and that I was, there was a lot of Yuwatase, there was a lot of, I mostly did manga more than anime, but, yeah, no, looking back on it, it all started with Castle in the Sky.
That's definitely one that I need to watch in its entirety because, like, I've seen commercials. Yeah. I've seen enough art about it where I have an appreciation for it. Mm-hmm. And the art, like, the art, even though in, like, the books of it, are amazing as well. Like, I love Miyazaki's ability to take Western concepts and make them his own.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even with
and
my
again,
own.
Like, going back and watching it now, he hadn't fully developed his art yet, and you can go through and say, oh, there's the nature theme, like, it's a trope now, you know, like, yeah, you can tell, you can pick out the, oh, that's the Miyazaki, oh, hey, there's the weirdly designed aircraft, like, classic Miyazaki, and he hadn't really nailed down how to do those yet, but it's still the intention shines through.
So this is, like, right, this is, like, not too long after Castle of Cagliostro, right?
Oh, good, that's classic.
Which was, I believe, that might have been his first piece of animation, like professionally. Anyway,
I actually don't know. IMDb. Woo!
Which is that's another one I highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I actually I don't know that one. I have a complete collection of Miyazaki, but it's the complete collection of like Miyazaki Ghibli.
Oh, yes, okay.
So like, Nausicaa? Probably, yeah, his very... it does have Nausicaa, actually. Oh,
that's one of my favorites.
It does have Nausicaa, but again, even though that wasn't technically a Ghibli yet, it's... I think it's well-known enough over here that it would have had to be included.
Well, I'll say this about Miyazaki, is that theme, the Golden Rule theme, is very prevalent in a lot of his movies, and there's something to be said about using that childlike innocence, especially with characters who are aware of how the world works. Like in Princess Mononoke, mm-hmm. Those two characters are aware of how the world works, but they still have this like wide-eyed innocence about them that allows them to do these incredible things.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really, like, that's so what he does. And, you know, I'm actually just going to read straight from my notes now, that it's pretty standard Miyazaki. Themes are recognizable as tropes nowadays. The art holds up. Story and characters hold up. Miyazaki films are heartwarming and compelling, speaking to basic instincts about family, what power means, loss of innocence in both individuals and in society, and all these elements interplay really well. Plus, I mean, overall, it's all framed in a steampunk treasure hunt, so, you know, you can't really go wrong with that.
My first anime is going to be a little bit different. As we mentioned earlier, I'm a little bit younger, so... I remember I was in, you know, sixth grade. I was that emo kid, didn't really have many friends, you know, and I started watching Naruto. And that was just a really groundbreaking thing for me because, you know, with Naruto, in like the first couple episodes, you see that he is all alone. And, you know, getting to go through his experience and you know, seeing that no matter where, you know, you are in your life, there are going to be people, you're going to make these friends, you're going to make this family, and that was a really big thing, you know, for me personally, especially growing up, and, you know, and then, of course, you have those characters like Sasuke and Gaara that are, like, you know, those really cute, like, emo boys, you know?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
So, of course, like, that appealed to me, but, I mean... I definitely watched that for a long time, at least a couple of years, but I didn't really get into anime until a couple of years ago now, until I was out of high school. Because as we had mentioned earlier, you know, going through, you know, school, there is that, you know, you watch anime, you're going to be exiled. Yeah. And, you know, going out of middle school, I was like, you know, I gotta like, hide this. I can't be that person, you know? And that was really dumb on my part because, you know, but I mean,
I mean, you were in middle school. Like, yeah, your primary drive is to fit in.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, as I, you know, grew out of that. I recently, last year, watched all of Naruto again, from front to back. Well, going through it, I skipped some filler, but for the most part, I watched the whole thing in 3 months.
Yeah,
it was I mean, I skipped that, you know, filler with Jiraiya, you know, between Naruto and but you know, I skipped all that, and I finished the whole series in 3 months, and it was just the most wild ride. Every character, you know, you grow to love. Even, you know, a lot of people have these problems with, you know, like Sakura and like this and that, and it just, yeah, and every character, you just, I personally, you know, grew so attached to. You know, I'm watching this show 30 episodes a day, you know?
Pretty much.
It's a long series.
It definitely pays off. It pays off afterwards, because yeah, I remember getting so invested into it, even, like, all the way through. Like, I got to a point with Naruto where I'm just like, I cannot die until I finish the series. Yeah. Too much is going on right now.
Yeah, and it actually lined up so that when I was finishing, like, the last episode aired, like, that week, you know? So it was, like, really tough for me. Because it was ending completely. And I was like, no. But luckily, luckily we have, like, Boruto, but, I mean, it's not the same. I mean, it's cute.
Yeah.
It's not the like, same, it's cute to see this new gen, like, growing up. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's, like, cutesy. You're not getting any action yet.
I want you to hold on to that feeling, because you're going to feel that a lot as you get older.
It's
going to be like, oh, man, nothing's the same. The music ain't the same.
Nope.
Like, it's gonna
be like, I was talking about, you know, getting so deep into Yu-Gi-Oh! That's right. Had, like, 5 freaking, like, reboots and different gens, and I can't get into any of those.
Naruto is, I don't think people realize how much of an impact it had on the generation of fans that it created.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't say it changed the game for shonen anime, but it definitely established a lot of...
The bar?
Definitely established the bar. Like, many could argue that Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z helped to like, create a lot of the conventions that are there. But, like, shows like One Piece and Naruto, and to a lesser extent, Bleach, as I give that series a middle finger. Those shows, which were the big three at the time, they cemented what good shonen is.
Yeah. And I actually, because those series really cemented a genre and made things very popular over here, they have their place, but I would not recommend jumping in on any of those series, because their one huge downfall is how long they are.
Yeah.
And it is incredibly intimidating to be like, oh, have you seen the show Naruto? And you start watching it and go, there are how many episodes?
Yeah. I finished it in 3 months.
Watching like 30 episodes a day!
I would also argue that I wouldn't recommend Bleach simply because of how quickly it jumps the shark. It might get you to hate shonen, honestly.
Shonen has a jetpack now.
I kind of gave up right after the Hueco Mundo arc.
Yeah,
I should have done the same.
Like, yeah, that's about where I just kind of stopped getting interested. I'm very glad that I kind of stopped both reading and watching after the Hueco Mundo arc. One, because I wanted to catch up on the manga before I kept watching the anime, because the anime went through phases where they had to do filler arcs while they waited for the manga to keep updating.
That's a big problem that Naruto's had. Because this ended so poorly, now we're seeing the anime industry do more, oh, let's just do it in season blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well for shows like My Hero Academia and Black Clover. No, I can't.
Well, that's another nice thing about anime, is you get to choose if, like, you hate a voice actor in one language, just switch over to the other.
Yeah.
That was my main thing why I had trouble getting into Naruto, was Naruto's voice pisses me off. I can't do his English voice, but I'm willing to bet I could happily watch it in Japanese.
I really can't do any anime in English voices. I mean Naruto. I mean, I watched it on, you know, Cartoon Network on TV when I was a kid. But like going back and like when I rewatched it, I definitely
no. I think that's like, what turned me off was I remember watching it. I was babysitting at like midnight, so the kids were asleep, and it happened to be like what was on. And this was a pretty regular occurrence for me. I grew up on Cape Cod, and I worked for a babysitting agency. Oh, wow. So like I would go to really nice hotels while the parents went out, and literally just be sitting there in a hotel room with the lights out, twiddling my thumbs at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, which is when I'd be able to turn the TV on and watch the watch Adult Swim.
Okay, so Britt, I'll ask you right now. Favorite Naruto character?
Shikamaru. God.
Yeah, I was gonna say Shikamaru. Like, absolutely, hands down. Like,
yeah, Shikamaru definitely is one of the best characters in that series. I don't think people understand that just because you're smart doesn't mean that you necessarily want to be in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Shikamaru represented that for a lot of people. A lot of people was like, I just want to enjoy my life. I don't want to be worshipped because I'm smart. Like, no, I don't want to do your homework. I just want to do my own. Be left alone. Play video games.
I just
want to
lay down and look at the clouds.
Yes.
What a drag.
Not much.
I'm pretty sure that's on my Instagram. My
yes.
Tagline there.
Just want to lay down and look at the clouds. Yes.
Yeah. I mean.
Let's see.
Yeah. You've got Shikamaru is probably one of my favorites, but you know. I also just have such a connection with Naruto himself. That is
same.
That is my sunshine boy, protect forever. Like, although his edges in the new episodes are a little messed up, but that's fine. We don't want to talk about it. Naruto's edges. No. But,
I blame Studio Pierro for that.
Yeah, that's all right. But.
That edge is coming to age.
Yeah. You gotta have a flop. You can't be awesome all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's so dead cool.
If toy animation can get away with shitty animation for Dragon Ball Super, why can't they, right?
Yeah. Alright, so what's one anime that you would recommend right now?
A good anime to start off on, Kino's Journey. It is one of my absolute modern favorites. No central plot per se. It's literally about the journey. Mm-hmm. And it's also a good depiction of, a character whose gender is unimportant. Mm-hmm. Because, when the characters find out that Kino is the girl, it's like, oh, really? And
okay, whatever. Really cool.
And there are a lot of philosophical messages, but it doesn't wax philosophical like, say, Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
Where every other word is some philosophical nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or a pun off of Shakespeare or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was one episode in that really stuck with me where Kino saves this band of travelers on the side of the road. In order to feed them, she had to kill these rabbits. And the travelers actually were human traffickers.
Oh!
And they wanted to add her to their collection. She kills them, and then at the end of the episode she says, I should have saved the rabbits. And that episode stuck with me because, even to this point I kind of just think that could have easily been me. Mm-hmm. Given my right opportunities. I've seen people on the street get their phone stolen for letting someone use it. So that episode of Kino's Journey definitely resonates with me because for that very reason.
Yeah.
How about you, Mark? What would be your recommendation for a first anime?
My recommendation for a first anime? Does it need to be new or something?
Anything.
No, anything.
Yeah.
Anything really?
Hmm.
Well, for first anime, I'd have to say... Heavy Object. It's relatively new. Mm. It takes on the man versus mech thing. Pretty much they phased out conventional warfare for this giant spherical shaped mech, which they just call a heavy object. It's layered upon layered armaments. It has no real wires or cables running through it, but sort of graphene tracings throughout the armament, which you can't really bust apart. It's
So wait, let me get this straight. So we ditched conventional warfare, guys like me, and we went to a fucking Death Star?
Well, that's because they tried taking it out. They
tried nuking it. They damaged some of the outer guns, but its main cannons were still functioning.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it wiped out a navy.
Oh or my two, gosh. Actually,
three separate navies.
So an armada.
Yeah, so now they're in the business of making those for the highest bidders.
There you go. Jeez. There you go.
Which is seen as the ultimate weapon, but an engineer found a way to like to actually take it on without having one of his own, like take it on a foot.
Right. I'm gonna go with One Punch Man.
Oh, One Punch!
Yes. Oh, sorry, so One Punch Man. Not only is it funny on the surface, but you need to get some depth with Saitama or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
You get some depth into his character because he's a dude who's worked his behind off. He's become like the super super powerful fighter. But he gets bored with the fact that he's able to knock everybody out with one punch. He's like a one hit wonder. Bam!
And that's that is a concept that could go very wrong very quickly, given with a less competent writer.
Mm-hmm. And so you have all his internal struggles. You have all this like messing around with dialogue between people thinking he's so awesome and so great, when in reality all he wants is to just have fun fighting. And like as somebody who's practiced martial arts, once you don't have a challenge anymore, you almost start to lose the love of it.
Yeah.
And the love is what keeps you going. And so whether it be BJJ, whether it be Muay Thai, whatever, you always want to be challenged because those challenges make you better. You know, if you get put into an arm bar and able to slip out, you have like this almost oh shit moment, right? So that's what One Punch Man is all about. It's about this one dude searching for this ultimate challenge. And it's only like 13 episodes. Check it out.
If we're talking about One Punch Man, we also just need to talk about the relationship between Saitama and Genos.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. They're so funny. Their characters just mesh so well. It's like...
Yeah, Genos is a straight man.
Yeah, he's like disciplined. And you know, you got Saitama. He's just like, dude, this is...
What?
Yeah, let's
it's not that serious.
Yeah, and he worships him. It's so funny. Like
how that show was sold to me was as a deconstructionist like fighting anime.
Yes, deconstruction of shonen anime as a whole.
Yeah, and that was the part that really went like, ooh, okay. And you watch it through the eyes of someone who's watched all of DBZ and whatnot, and go, yeah, no, this is what actually would happen.
Yeah, right?
Once you're not going to have god-tier villains descending so that you constantly have to keep improving yourself. Like, at some point, you're going to hit peak, and you're going to be the best in the world, and then what do you do with that? Yeah. And your whole life is fighting. Like, there really is. On top of the great character dynamics and stuff, it really is just, especially for, it's a great jumping off point, but it's also a really nice thing for, like, the jaded anime fan.
That's totally me, because I had just gotten off Code Geass, right?
Yeah,
and after
yeah.
Code Geass, to have to watch Bleach was like, what the fuck? and so I'm like, all right, I ain't watching no more anime until something good comes around. So then I started watching Attack on Titan. But when I finally saw One Punch Man, I'll never forget it. When that mosquito chick, like, it starts, like, you know, causing havoc, he just comes out of nowhere. She's just like, boom, blood.
That mosquito.
Mosquitoes suck.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not a huge buildup, and it's not a huge accomplishment. He's just like, meh.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
It's no different to him than literally just squishing a regular mosquito.
No. I would also say, as far as characters are concerned, I like characters like Moomin Rider. Because, like, he's so far down the tier, but that doesn't stop him. He still keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
That's a character that I can personally relate to. It's just, like, as someone who kind of is not necessarily exceptional at anything, I'm just like, I'm still going to keep going, you know, maybe I'll get somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I auditioned for The Voice not too long ago, and the competition was just like, okay, I'm probably not going to make it past this room.
That's all right. You're still a splendid ninja.
Yes.
So, actually, I have two main things that I recommend people. The first is,
for the, like, non-anime fan or someone who's more into sci-fi, Cowboy Bebop